Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean?
He's fat!
I don't know how long you guys got, but I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
People will actually listen to this, superstar. You gotta be careful what we say. I prefer no tattoos, piercings, and I don't like dirty feet. So if you fit any of that criteria, my email's on the website.
Then you look like a doofus, right?
Absolutely.
Well, sometimes when I'm on the CTA, I look like a doofus.
That's awesome.
Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps, and the players bump, and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh!
Oh! Oh. That didn't... That wasn't supposed to happen. Now the Blackhawks lose. Superstar! More importantly, are you with us?
I am.
You know, people have been asking about you.
I did not know that, but I thank them for their concern.
People come up to me at the United Center all the time. They come up to me and they say, "Hey, Block, how you doing, man? Nice to meet you." But what's going on with Superstar? How come he's not on the show? You know, and I just say, you know, he's got things. You know, he's a man. He's busy. He's got things.
I got things. I do have things. I do things, but we're here tonight.
Yes, we are. We're here. It's our first ever. It's an experiment. Everything here is an experiment. But, yes, it is our first ever Blackhawks post-game show, post-game wrap-up. And we will, if they're, you know, the people who are listening to this right now live, if you'd like to call in and talk about that awful hockey game. It wasn't awful. I mean, it was, you know, the Blackhawks lost to a team that can't score.
Yeah. It was awful.
Well, I mean...
Don't sugarcoat it, Block. It was awful.
You know, the highlight of the game, and I need to ask you this, because it is the absolute highlight of all of hockey that's going on tonight, and there are two games that are still in action, in intermissions right now, with Edmonton and Detroit, and then St. Louis and the Phoenix Coyotes. Excellent matchup there down at the Scott Trade Center. Did Eddie Olczyk, during the second period, did he actually say, "Keep jamming until somebody comes on you"?
I did hear that, yes. Yes, he did. He did say that.
I beg and I plead for someone with more aptitude in this field than I do. If you TiVo tonight's game, I need you to lift the audio of Eddie Olczyk say, "Keep jamming until someone comes on you." And I will create a brand new open. I don't care how many hours it takes me and how many of those hours are taken away from my sleep. I will have that as part of the open on Tuesday night. The best thing that Eddie Olczyk ever said, keep jamming until someone comes on you.
That's great.
You got to love that Eddie Olczyk.
And Black, maybe you could fill me in, because I caught the second half of the story, but the only thing I heard him say was something about a local McDonald's at 3 in the morning. And I immediately wondered if you were in Nashville.
No, that was obviously that's an inside joke about something that happened last night down in Nashville, but I am not aware of what happened. I can look into it for you.
Well, I didn't know if I missed the first half of the story and just, you know, caught that part, but yeah, I just heard 3 o'clock in the morning at a local McDonald's here.
Bigger crowd than I was expecting tonight down at the Somme Center. I don't have the score sheet isn't official yet, but it didn't look too barren. Although, did you see? I'm pretty much, I think I know the answer to this question. Did you see the game in Atlanta tonight?
No, I did not.
Alexander Ovechkin and his Washington Capitals are in town, and there was about 75 people at the Phillips Arena. I kid you not.
Well, that doesn't bode well for Thrasher hockey.
Yeah. But don't dare try to move the team out of Atlanta. The NHL will come down on you with great force.
The wrath that they are.
Yeah. So let's get we're going to fool around at the end, because, I mean, this is a post-game show. The number to call in, I think, I don't know that I said it. I don't know what I said. I do want to tell you a story, but I can't be responsible. I can't be held responsible for what comes out of my mouth. So if I sometimes repeat things or I don't like remember saying something 2 minutes after I said it, just forgive me. There's nothing I can do. But the number to call in is, you know, get your cell phones out and your long distance plans ready. The number to call in is 347-857-3781, 347-857-3781. If you have any great wisdom to dole out upon us and the audience, we'd love to hear it. I got some things to say about this game, I'm sure. Superstar, what were your overall impressions of tonight's 2-0 loss down to the Nashville Predators?
I thought, first of all, that first period was just god-awful. They looked out of sync. They looked like they almost seemed like a team that played out west last night and got in really late.
Well, the Nashville actually did play out west last night. They were in Minnesota, and they did get back late.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was talking about the Hawks.
Oh, okay.
They didn't seem like they had the legs under them. They didn't seem coherent as a group at all. I thought QA played really well all night, and you know, he's continued to play well, so that's a positive sign. But I thought the second period they played a lot better. They couldn't obviously dent the net, but they got stronger and stronger. But there's something missing from this team right now, and it needs to come quickly.
Well, it's Jonathan Toews. I mean,
one
thing that we see, I mean, it's so clear, is that there is, and we talked about this before the season even started, and I don't even know that their depth up the middle is that great with Jonathan Toews in the lineup. And I know I get in a lot of trouble every time I say that. I get people like Sam Feld angry with me anytime I say that, and I think Jonathan Toews is a very important player. I think he's a great player, but I don't know that the Blackhawks' depth up the middle is that terrific when he's the number one center. I mean, he is, and when he's out of the lineup, it's god-awful. I mean, when Andrew Ebbett is centering for Patrick Sharp, you've got problems. I'm done watching Andrew Ebbett play hockey. You know what? He could play hockey. I'd just rather he play it in Anaheim, Phoenix, or San Antonio. I mean, those are the places where Andrew Ebbett needs to play hockey. Not at the United Center tomorrow night, where he's going to play hockey tomorrow night. Because I doubt, I can't imagine that Toews will be in the lineup tomorrow, The Hawks are going to need him because the Hawks, if the Hawks play tomorrow night the way they play tonight against in Nashville against these Predators, they're going to get smoked by Montreal. And we can probably figure out that tomorrow night the goalie's going to be Antti Niemi. That's even more trouble. I don't even know that it's good if Huey's in there. The one thing I noticed about Huey the last few games, and it was really, I mean, he got lucky a few times tonight because he is side to side from post to post, he is overcommitting. And many, many times tonight, if Nashville, this is one of the things that one of the problems that Nashville's having right now, and it's something that happens. Turn my speakers down. Weather.com is informing me that it's raining outside. well, my car is getting washed. That's a good thing. But one of the things that I mean, he's overcommitting from side to side, and Nashville, because they're not, you know, they don't have confidence right now, and when you don't have confidence, it's not about not knowing what to do. It's the fact that you shoot the puck and you shoot the puck and you shoot the puck and it doesn't go in. Well, subconsciously, when you shoot the puck, instead of shooting the puck and then continuing your obligation, you know, to drive to the net, you shoot the puck and then you stop because it's like, is it going to go in this time? It's like that sort of mentality. And you could see that in the first 30 minutes of the game, you could see that in the Nashville Predators, just the way they approached the net. There wasn't the drive to the net. A couple times Shea Weber was bringing the puck up. I saw it in Santorelli. Even Steve Sullivan. I mean, there wasn't a continuation to the net. There wasn't that sort of aggression to get that puck and bring it to the net with determination and like it meant like it meant something to them that they got to the net. It was you bring it in and it's like, okay, now what do we do? Okay, who can I give it to that has more confidence than me or that I have more confidence in than myself? Because I mean, that's where you get. I mean, that's a point where you get like with a team like Nashville and where they're at right now. I mean, you got a team that coming into tonight. I mean, they're 2-3 at home right now. They've played 5 games at home. They've scored 7 goals at the Somay Center. That's the team the Blackhawks lost to tonight. So, I mean, you know, but it definitely seemed to me that once they got that first goal, things changed. The momentum changed. The Blackhawks were having a lot more trouble dealing with the Predators. You know, they got a little bit more jump in their step, and they were going to the net. Huey was having to deal with more traffic in front of them, and the Blackhawks had to really hound, you know, buckle down and defend that crease to prevent any more damage on the back door. Because, I mean, Huey, he goes side to side. He slides past that post. If for some reason he has to go down to a knee, it's over with. Keith and Seabrook, they have to guard that crease. A forward has to come down and play low in the slot, to help out the defenseman. It's a bad situation there right now. It's going to take time. If they're truly trying to change his approach and stylistically and the things that he does, it's going to take a while, and it's a growing pain. But, I mean, that's the one thing that I noticed is how many times tonight, if they were playing a team that you know, had confidence in what they were doing and, you know, even knew what they were doing offensively, I mean, they would have been in a lot of trouble. So if those same situations, those same scenarios come up in tomorrow night's game, the Blackhawks are going to be in a lot of trouble, and it's going to be a high-scoring affair because, I mean, the Blackhawks didn't have to worry about Nashville pumping up the lights on the scoreboard because they're just not capable of it right now. I don't think that they're as bad as you know, I think that for me, watching the Predators, one thing that's clear, and Dan Hamhuis had an awful night tonight. Dan Hamhuis may have been the worst player on the ice, and that's saying something. But their 6 defensemen are pretty darn good. Shea Weber, their best defenseman tonight. Cody Franson, a little bit disappointed in his development, but he's going to be a good player. I really like Kevin Klein and how confident and smooth he makes decisions and little passes on the ice. He's a smart player, and he's a good 5 or 6 defenseman, which is all he'll ever be most likely, but he's good in that slot. So they have the depth. Ryan Suter, aside from Shea Weber, they don't have a superstar-like defenseman. They don't have, Weber is a number one guy, and tonight he played like a number one guy. But he doesn't, he doesn't always play that way. But I think from the goaltending, the blue line, up to the, you know, from that aspect of it, they're okay. But I mean, they're without Jason Arnott and Martin Erat tonight. Arnott's when he plays is their most important player. Martin Erat's off to an awful start. And then you got J.P. Dumont, who had a good first period. He played really well, I thought. He had a lot of jump in his step. He was strong along the boards. He was playing with some purpose. And towards the end of the game, he floated more, and he sort of lost his way out there. It may be time to go away, J.P. Dumont. I mean, your time may be done, because I haven't seen anything from him this year. I think that first period tonight, and I haven't seen every Nashville game. I have seen... I've seen 3, 4, 5 Nashville games now. That was his best period by far, and Nashville didn't even have that good of a period. I'm just talking about his wall work and his determination and sort of the skip in his step tonight that I haven't seen yet this year. Didn't result in anything, but then again, it tailed off towards the end of the game, and he was sort of non-existent some more. But as far as the Hawks go, the best player on the ice tonight by far, Patrick Kane.
Well, that's not even debatable. He was flying everywhere. Every time he had the puck on his stick, he had that feeling that something was going to happen, that he was, you know, he was going to pull another one out for you, and it just didn't happen. And I don't know if it's I didn't take notice of who he was playing with most of the game. I know that on the power play they switched Bufflin out for Kopechki for a while, and they had a nice little shift, but it almost seems like he's looking for that other winger or somebody else to kind of get loose to make something happen.
Well, for those that either didn't see the game or weren't paying that close attention to it, maybe you missed the beginning. The lines as they started out, and I want to mention this too. I don't know, like, how seriously Joel Quenneville takes himself or how much of a nerd he is, but he started the game with Duncan Keith and Brian Campbell out on the ice, and then the puck was dropped, and then he immediately switched Campbell with Seabrook, you know, the same Brent Seabrook who's been, you know, Duncan Keith's defensive partner for the last 4 years, you know, as if Joel Quenneville was going to trick Barry Trotz into thinking that he was going to play his two, you know, the two fastest defensemen maybe in the league, you know, together all night long. You know, the two guys that have never played together, all of a sudden he was going to show up in Nashville and play those guys together all night long. I didn't understand the purpose of that. You know, that was coaching masturbation is what it was. And Joe Quenneville has been guilty of a lot of that so far this year. You know, I don't know whether he's trying to vindicate his worth or just be seen, you know, from behind the bench. But that was just stupid. I didn't understand that at all. It was just ridiculous. But Blackhawks dressed 7 defensemen tonight because they didn't bother recalling Jacob Dahl. So they dressed Jordan Hendry in the on the left wing on the fourth line with Colin Frazier and Thomas Kopechki. Blackhawks started with Boland, Ladd on the left side, Versteeg on the right. They stuck with that pretty much the whole game. Patrick Kane did get double-shifted. Hendry sort of sat on the sidelines and watched the rest of the game. So Kane got played a bunch with Colin Frazier. But he started and played a lot of the game with Madden and Bufflin. And then the Andrew Ebbett, Patrick Sharp, Troy Brower debacle. Was the third line, quote unquote. It was interesting to see because we got Dave Boland back on the point again with Brian Campbell, which is probably my biggest aggravation watching the Blackhawks is seeing Dave Boland play the point when you've got Brian Campbell, Cam Barker, the guy that's supposedly the most important player on the Blackhawks in Duncan Keith, and Brent Seabrook. I mean, you've got those four defensemen, and those four defensemen can't play, you know, they can't be your two defensive pairings on the power play. I don't understand it. but that's neither here nor there. I think the second star of the game on the Blackhawks, from the Blackhawks' perspective, I don't think he was the second best player on the ice tonight, but the second star was definitely Nicklas Hjalmarsson.
I thought Hjalmarsson had a hell of a first period, and you know, was playing really well, and then you know he blocked the shot and went out for a little while.
That happened at the top of the second period. Actually, the highlight of his first period, and we saw it again in you know the start of the third when he clamped down on the half wall and he gave Patrick Hornquist had his head down a lot tonight, and he just drilled his countrymen, just drilled him, and he also did it in the first period, but he did it in the first period out of anger when about 5 minutes into the game. Hjalmarsson took the puck. He wheeled around the defensive circle, and he forced the pass up the middle. Hornquist ended up with it. He got tipped, and Hornquist ended up with it. Hjalmarsson, seeing and knowing that he made a terrible mistake, just put the brights on and just unloaded on Hornquist, who again wasn't paying attention, and got drilled just inside the blue line. The Hawks regained possession. But, yeah, he was all over Hornquist all night, even in little battles along the wall. I don't know. I'd have to ask, see if there's anything, there's any history there as far as those two not liking each other or having battles or something like that. But, yeah, he was all over Hornquist all night long. Individual moments and good things he was doing all game long. But I think the second best player on the ice for the Blackhawks, and this is no joke, is Brent Sopel tonight. Brent Sopel was you know, he was every time he was out there, he did something good. Didn't really make any glaring mistakes. I mean, there were things that I think were out of his control. It's been this way all year long with him. I mean, tonight Brent Sopel was jumping up into the rush. He's leading the rush. When the Blackhawks were not getting any chances at all in the third period. Who was it? It was Brent Sopel who took the puck up the near side and drove into the zone and threw a puck on the net, and tried to get a little momentum going for his team. It's little things like that that are more important than you'd think. And I thought he had a terrific game. I mean, the 5-on-3. Dealing with Colin Wilson, I believe it was Colin Wilson in front of the net, Patrick Hornquist. He also had that block. He tipped that cross-ice pass that was going to Hornquist. And he also had the block shot nearing the end of the 5-on-3 when Hjalmarsson jumped back on the ice. Blackhawks had three defensemen and Colin Frazier out there defending what at that point became a 5-on-4 with Dave Bolin in the box. I just thought Sopel played so well tonight, It needs to be said because there's so many people out there that don't want to give him any credit. They don't like him. They've already made up their mind about him. So they'll say, oh, well, yeah, he hasn't been too bad. Or for Brent Sopel, he's all right. You know, he's been all right. But, you know, I mean, that's garbage. Give the guy his credit. I mean, he's playing a ton better than he did last year. Yes, he was bad last year, but he's playing a ton better. He's giving you what, you ask of him and a little bit more. And that's what you need out of your fifth or sixth defenseman, and he's been very, very good this season.
He is, and I think a good way to put it is he's playing within himself and doing things he's capable of doing, and he's doing them well. You brought something up earlier in that little rant about throwing the puck on net, and I believe Eddie Olczyk brought it up early in the first period that the Hawks have been doing a really good job throwing the puck on net, crashing the net, getting rebounds, getting, quote-unquote, ugly goals. And I think they did a good job of that, but I think they almost looked to do that too much tonight. Instead of, trying to come in and take a shot, it was almost, okay, throw it on net, and somebody's going to crash the net.
It was a little bit one-dimensional, is kind of, I think, what you're trying to say. I mean, there was a lot of times, and we see this a lot, because when you watch the Blackhawks, especially at home, when they're trying to be a little bit more fancy, one of the things the Blackhawks do really, really well is especially the left wing. The left wing will slip behind the last defenseman back. At the very end of the game, Andrew Ladd did it, and I believe it was Dave Bolin didn't look to sort of sneak a pass through there or you know, have a half shot and get a deflection. He just, you know, like you said, he just threw it towards the net. Well, I mean, he didn't throw it, you know. I mean, if Dave Bowen's coming up the right side and Andrew Ladd's coming up the left side and he's slipped behind the defender, shooting the puck, you know, on your forehand to the right, you know, to the right side, you know, the goalie's left, you're right, I mean, to the near side. I mean, what chance does that give Andrew Ladd to make a play? It's not. He's got to go over all the way over to your side, the side that Dave Bowen's crashing anyway. I mean, try to make a play there, whether it's a quick snapshot that you really, what you're hoping for is Ladd, to get a stick on it, or just take a real shot and hope that Pecorino kicks it out to Ladd, who, like I said, had already slipped behind the defender. And it's something that Bowen should know. I mean, he's a smart player. I don't dislike Dave Bowen at all. I think he's a good player. But, I mean, it's just little things like that the Blackhawks weren't doing tonight. They just weren't recognizing. Like you said, I think they were a little bit one-dimensional. Yeah, I mean, they've been doing a good job of getting to the net and creating traffic and sort of storming the ground, so to speak. But, you know, I mean, tonight, some of that stuff was – they didn't do a lot of that. I don't think they did a ton of it. You know, I'll try to pull up the official score sheet here in a second, but I just thought that it was too one-dimensional, and it just didn't seem to be cohesive at all. I don't know if Q, like, you know, sort of rescinded the curfew because they were in Nashville, and Nashville is a popular place for NHL players to go and, you know, stay out a little bit later than usual. But I mean, they just didn't look good at all. I mean, they looked very, very sluggish, you know, pretty much the whole game, and it wasn't really good to watch.
No, and Block, you know, mentioning the score sheet, one of the glaring things that jumps out at me right away is the ice time for Duncan Keith. 28 minutes and 43 seconds.
Yeah,
that is a lot of ice.
That's great. Well, let's talk about the first goal Nashville scored with Joel Ward. One of the things that I always complain about and I always point out about Duncan Keith, and one of the things that he doesn't do well, and he does a lot of things well, one of the things that he's guilty of time and time and time again, it's a broken record with Duncan Keith, is he leaves his check in front of his goalie. And he did it again tonight with Joel Ward. Francis Bouillon is coming up off the rush on the left side. Seabrook's dealing with a man, and he sort of comes off, you know, that man slightly because he's got to force the issue. He's got to defend the pass, and the pass goes right through Seabrook to the other side. Well, Duncan Keith floated off Joel Ward. He does it all the time. He leaves his check in front of the net, and by the time he got back to him, the puck was already in the back of the net. He does it time and time again. We talked about before with Cristobal Huey. If he does get down to a knee, he's not getting back. I mean, there's no chance. He's not getting back to cover anything. So, from this point forward, for the foreseeable future, Duncan Keith can't. I don't care what he's thinking or what he's anticipating, because that's a lot of what Duncan Keith does is instincts. It's anticipating, reading plays. And being, you know, knowing that if he reads it wrong or he makes a mistake or the puck takes a weird bounce and the play goes the other way, he's quick enough to sort of compensate for those, those risks. Well, right now he's got to be concerned with his goaltender, and Antti Niemi, the same concern is there because Niemi he doesn't really know what he's doing. He's just looking for the puck and trying to make saves. He's not. You know, he's not paying attention where he's at. I mean, right now the Blackhawks defensemen have to be concerned with buckling down and guarding that crease and being second and third goalies. Otherwise, they're going to get in a lot of trouble. Once these other teams realize that, I mean, those openings are there, they're going to start crashing the net. And the Hawks are going to have a lot of problems.
Agreed. You hit it right on the head. It's as good as their defensemen are, they need to do a better job in their own end.
Right, and like you said, 28 minutes, 43 seconds tonight for Duncan Keith, almost five of it on the power play, which is good to see. You know, if he's going to be a $6 million defenseman, if that's what some people say, I think he's a five, but whatever he's going to be, he's got to play on a power play. And no more of this Patrick Sharp or Dave Bolin crap on the power play on the point. It's silly. You know, you've got all this money invested in your blue line. These guys better, you know, these guys should be able to play on your power play. Brian Campbell, 23-17. Seabrook, who, I gotta say this, Seabrook did not look ready to play tonight. He looked sluggish throughout. He did not look comfortable out there. You know, he had a slight concussion. He didn't look like a guy who was ready to play. He didn't skate, you know, unanimously all night. You know, every time Duncan Keith jumped over in five-on-five, any kind of situation, penalty kill, he did not. I mean, he wasn't automatically over the boards. They were, you know, playing back-to-back nights, Quenneville was probably a little bit hesitant to, you know, just, you know, throw him back out there like regular. But not a good game from him tonight. And trying to think of who else surprised me. I guess it doesn't surprise me, but Thomas Kopecky played 10 minutes tonight, and half of it was on the power play. I guess there's the argument to be made that, like, what else do you expect, if you got Thomas Kopecky and, you know, he's sort of on the fourth line just because he makes, you know, 1.2 a year, and, I mean, what else are you going to do with a guy that makes 1.2 a year and he really can't do much of anything? He's not good enough to play in the top nine. You could squeeze him in on the third line if you want, but your third line is populated, you know, some nights by Chris Versteeg, some nights by, you know, Dustin Byfuglien. You've got nearly a $3 million center on your third line. Thomas Kopecky's not good enough to play with those guys. It's kind of pathetic. He's stuck on the fourth line, but, you know, he needs to play with skilled guys in order to have any sort of chance at success. And while there's injuries, I guess there's the argument to be made to play him with, guys like Boland and Kane and that. But if you're going to do it, just go ahead and do it. I mean, don't be shy about it. I just put him on the number one line. Let him skate, you know, not every shift, but give him 15 minutes. And just let him skate and see what he can do and maybe get him going. And maybe brings a little bit of that, if he gets some confidence, he brings that to the fourth line. I don't see the point in having him waste away on the fourth line and then you bring him out cold for power play situations. He had that one good shift on the power play, but for the most part, he was on the second unit a lot tonight. That's where most of those minutes came from, being on the second unit. The Blackhawks were throwing out, at the beginning of the game, Sharp, Byfuglien, Kane, Boland, and Campbell, and then their second unit was Brouwer, Versteeg, Kopecky, Keith, and Barker. I mean, that's for the first half of the game, those were their power play units. And, later on in the game, we retreated to Andrew Ebbett on the power play. That was a treat. But that all goes back to what we said at the top of the show. I mean, the Blackhawks have no depth right now up the middle, and it's killing them because Patrick Sharp either, you know, he can't and he really isn't able to play center anymore. He doesn't want to. And, they've got...
He's another guy who I didn't think had a very good game.
No, I mean, Kane set him up beautifully on that one pass right on the stick, and he just shanked it. It should have been 1-0 Hawks right there. It's probably a whole different game if he's able to, it didn't even look like he realized it was there until it was too late. I mean, if he's able to put that thing in, yeah, it's probably a completely different game. But, it's his fourth straight game he doesn't have a point, so... You know, hopefully for Patrick Sharp, he gets out of that tomorrow night when the Canadians come in because they're going to need him. I mean, they're going to need him skating really well tomorrow night. Chris Versteeg's got to play smart hockey tomorrow night. If he comes out and dipsy doodles and plays that rag hockey tomorrow night, that's going to be trouble because the Canadians can turn the play in a hurry the other way, and Versteeg is the Blackhawks' biggest culprit in giving the puck up or making bad decisions, and all of a sudden the play's going the other way. So that's something that's got to change tomorrow night. Because Montreal, they're not very big, but they're fast as heck, and they're getting really good goaltending right now from Yaroslav Halak. So, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think overall you still have to be impressed with what this team's done. With the injuries they've had, and even the goaltending they've gotten, which is a shock to me, but you're right. We really need to get this depth back. We need to get Taves going and back on the ice, and Hossa's coming back. Not coming back. He's going to start again. And things will change. I think this team will start scoring a lot more goals.
0 for 5 in 10 minutes of power play time tonight. That's unacceptable. For a group, regardless if Taves is out there or not, for, a group, a first unit that should be able to get one goal and they're out there half the time. So they should be able to get one goal in 5 minutes of 5-on-4 action. But they didn't, and it killed them tonight. Jared Smith, Blackhawks gave up the empty netter at the end. Jared Smithson, and then Dustin Byfuglien. I don't know what he did because I had to set up the show, but Dustin Byfuglien gets two and a 10-minute misconduct at the end for unsportsmanlike conduct. Totally different. Talking about unsportsmanlike conduct, Monday night in Anaheim. I don't know if you saw this, but Colton Orr of the Toronto Maple Leafs is fighting George Parros of the Anaheim Ducks, right? They're going at it for about a minute, maybe over a minute. Just going toe-to-toe, a real wear-down fight. Gets to the point where looks like they're about to stop, and the linesmen are looking at them, asking them, like, you guys want to stop? We're going to come in now. We're going to come in. And I guess one of the linesmen, Brian Murphy, felt like, okay, they want me to come in and stop this, because it's not many people will tell you this, but that's the conversation that's going on most of the time. The fighters are there to do their job. They do their job, and then they tell the linesman, okay, that's enough now, and then they come in and break it up. Well, Brian Murphy evidently felt like he had reason, or he was asked to step in and stop the fight. Colton Orr decided that this was not what he wanted, so he basically pie-faced Brian Murphy and shoved him to the ground. NHL, there was no discipline there. Because the rule is that the referee, one of the referees, have to write up a report and submit it to the league. That's protocol in order for the NHL to do anything about it. Seems ridiculous to me, but that's what needs to happen. For an abusive official has to be written up by the referee after the game and submitted to the league as a report. And then it's reviewed, and then maybe Brian Murphy felt like he made a mistake and he got what he deserved. But I just think that, to me, that's another thing that needs to be changed with the NHL, because because these guys, these referee and the linesmen especially, have a rapport going with the players. So if they don't want to rock the boat, or they don't want to, maybe he's buddies with Colton Orr, but the rest of the league doesn't know that. The fans don't know that. And you see something like that happen, then, it's going to happen again. I guarantee in 2-3 weeks, a month from now, the same thing's going to happen again, but that player is going to get written up, and he's going to get suspended, and that's crap. Colton Orr should have been suspended 5 to 10 games for abusive official. I think, luckily for the NHL, it happened on Monday night in Anaheim, and it was two of the worst teams in the league right now, Anaheim and Toronto. Toronto got their first win in that game, but something else about the NHL that bugged me from the week.
I did not see it, but it definitely seems like there needs to be. I don't think a rule, in that situation when a fight's going on, there's probably an unwritten rule, but I do think something needs to be done about it. I agree.
I agree as well.
I agree.
All right, so the Blackhawks blow this one here in Nashville. Cristobal Huye, who is the designated starter when the Blackhawks play teams that can't score, loses this one. Not nearly his fault. He makes 26 saves in the game. Made some pretty good saves. Third period, he came up huge a few times. Can't really fault him at all for the loss. When your team doesn't score, I mean, you can't blame him for the loss. But Pecorino wasn't really challenged too much. And Patrick Kane, you know, like we said before, he was the best player on the ice, but he had the puck a little bit too long sometimes tonight. There was one time where he was up, he came up on that two-on-one. He had Bufflin on the other side, and you could tell that Patrick Kane was like, I do not want to pass this puck to Dustin Bufflin. And he held on to it too long, and Shea Weber ended up being able to break up the two-on-one. It was a nice play by Shea Weber, but it's more that the credit to that one goes to Patrick Kane for holding on to it too long and not doing something with it. But I think in his mind, he didn't trust Bufflin with it, and he also didn't trust that he'd get it back, so that was why he held on to it. And he was right in both.
Yeah, I don't blame him either. I don't know if I'd want to give the Bufflin in that situation either.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you can't absolve him from. You got to criticize him for that because they had a 2-on-1, and they didn't get a shot on goal. And Kane had a few of those tonight where he didn't have options. He was trying to create something. By the time he decided to shoot, I mean, there was a stick on his stick. You know, somebody hooked him, just got in his way. There was a lot of that tonight. He should have pulled the trigger, you know, a bit quicker a few times tonight. But the Montreal Canadiens sitting downtown right now, waiting for the Blackhawks tomorrow night, Friday night at the United Center. The only meeting of the year between the two clubs, and the first time Montreal has been in town in 2 years. So it'll be a big night. I'm excited.
I think it'll be a hell of a game.
Your enthusiasm is just uproarious.
I am enthused. I am enthused. You know, Black, it's, you know, getting a job, getting up early, it's past my bedtime, man.
I still have to go to work, and I have to as soon as we get off the air here, I have to punch the said button on my column for the Committed Indian tomorrow night. For those of you going down to the game, we talked about this on Tuesday, but I didn't talk about it until the very end of the show. So I want to mention it. The Committed Indian tomorrow night, you can find that sold outside the United Center. And then make sure you keep it in your coat pocket. Don't let anybody see you walk in with it. $3 outside each of the gates, or just to the side of each of the gates. They can't really stand in front. They'll get in trouble. But I have a column. The point is I have a column to write watching these games that are going on. 2 pages on pages 12 and 13 tomorrow night. Big, big, huge feature on the great Steve Larmer. And the fact that the reason being is the 16th anniversary of Steve Larmer becoming a New York Ranger via the Hartford Whale is this coming Monday, November 2nd. And the end of an era for Chicago Blackhawks fans, and seeing Grandpa go. And I obviously remember that time. I mean, what was it like? Because obviously everybody knew he was going to leave. I mean, he said that was it. He wasn't coming back, and the Blackhawks sort of played hardball with him and wanted to, they were trying to trade him the whole time. Everybody knew, but even the day that it happened, it was sort of like, you know, for people that were fans throughout the '80s and all those great teams, or at least they seemed like great teams until they played the Edmonton Oilers. And then 1 year Calgary. But, I mean, just seeing him go, and he was the last piece that had stuck around from that era, and having that go and not really knowing, and understanding that that was the first ball to drop in the core that was the great team that was here from, you know, 90, 91, 92, 93, and then he left. There was one last hurrah in the shortened season of 95 that was sort of sidelined by Roenick's knee injury. That season may have gone very differently if Roenick hadn't gotten injured, but he did. And then one by one, all the great players from that team all left and had much success elsewhere. So, I mean, you can think back to that day, Superstar, and, like, remember what it was like and kind of, I don't know, your feelings on it.
Well, you know, like you mentioned, it was kind of like the first ball to drop as far as, you know, where this team was going and what it became. And I don't think I even realized how important he was to that team of those, you know, the 92, 93, you know, years until he was gone. And you saw him wearing the blue and red. And you really realized how good the guy really was here.
Yeah, well,
and if you remember, there was a big hubbub when he did get. I don't think, if I remember, he held out, and there was he had the consecutive game streak snapped because of it.
Well, yeah, I mean that was the big thing that the Blackhawks thought that they were going to hold against him, and you know, but I mean Steve Lyon was a very proud man, and you know once he said that. That was it. You know, he wasn't coming back. I mean, there was no way he was coming back. And then I touch upon it in the article tomorrow night's Indian that, I mean, he came out and said, he's like, if the Blackhawks don't trade me, fine, I'm just going to retire. That's it. You know, I don't need to play hockey anymore. You know, I don't want to play for the Blackhawks and that's final. And the truth of the matter, it was a rift between him and Daryl Sutter. And he just wasn't going to – I mean, they were used to be really good friends, and now he didn't want to play for Daryl Sutter anymore. And he felt disrespected by, you know, by his coaches and you know, sort of and even by the organization. He didn't feel like they knew his worth, and he wanted to go somewhere else. And also the truth of the matter, as great as Steve Larmer was and as fondly as everybody should remember him because he – You know, I mean, it was a different era. You know, we didn't know as fans and reporters and all that. No, you didn't know everything. I mean, some of the reporters may, you know, knew a whole lot more than they would ever have reported. You know, it's a different ball game today, and they're dealing, the reporters, you know, the beat writers and everything are dealing with all these different mediums and you know, that in ways that information can get out there. So they have to approach their job differently now than they did in the 80s. When they protected the players, I mean, they traveled with the players, they ate and they drank with the players. I mean, it was just a different time, and you know, so you didn't know everything about these guys. And Steve Larmer was, I mean, he was introverted. I mean, he was a good guy, but he wasn't that pleasant to be around, you know, because I mean, he was very very serious and he treated hockey like a job and He came in, he punched in, he did his job, and he punched out, and he was the heck out the door. And today, just because of the way things are perceived, he probably would be perceived in a much different light today because players like that now, guys that are out the door before the media steps into the room, I mean, just because they – I mean, with Steve Larmer's case, it was because he couldn't wait to, you know, grab a smoke and a six-pack and go the hell home. You know, but, I mean, these days, that, I mean, you're going to get written up and blasted for something like that. And he did it every single night for 13 years.
Yeah, and it's a different way that people are looked upon inside the locker room by the media who are there every day. And you're right. That's what he did back then would not fly today at all.
No, I mean, he would be, you know, he'd probably be seen, and I shouldn't, again, for different reasons, but maybe like a guy like Todd Bertuzzi, You know, and again, it's a bad comparison. I just said that because I'm looking at him on the television screen. But I mean, Todd Bertuzzi is not seeing. He's not even forget about what he did to Steve Moore and all that, which is a horrible thing. You know, but I mean, he's just not looked at as a guy that's well liked, you know, by anybody. And Lama was well liked, and he had his friends on every team, but like. You know, I remember Chris Chelios one time saying that, you know, I mean, he's like, you know, I don't want to be like him. You know, I don't want to be like him where I'm just miserable all the time. And then, you know, that was Chelios' view of Larmer, you know, at least while he played with Larmer for 4 years. I mean, he felt like Larmer was just miserable all the time. And he didn't, like, he just looked at that, and it was sort of a turning point in Chelios' career, in that he's just like, I don't want to be that, you know, I don't want to be that guy, and I think he learned from watching Larmer. Not that I say that Larmer was a bad guy or you know he went about it the wrong way. Chelios just knew that wasn't the way for him, and he didn't want to become that, so he sort of changed the way he handled himself. A little bit off the ice and you know, around the other guys and how he, you know, how he dealt with the day-to-day grind of the NHL schedule. But, yeah, tomorrow night, oh, boy, like 2,800 words on Steve Larmer and everything surrounding the trade and what went down afterwards and Steve Larmer since and even a little bit of talk about possibly raising Steve Larmer's jersey to the rafters. It's you'll need a beverage. Maybe you'll need to kick your feet up. It's a two-pager. But I think it's well worth the read. And I usually don't say anything nice about anything that I write. So it must be okay.
You are very tough on yourself.
Yeah, well, truth be told. See, that's the thing. I was talking to somebody the other day. It was trying to, you know, they thought they were... They were being very kind. They were trying to help, I think. And they were saying, like, all the things that, again, we talked about this in the show the other night. Everybody's got ideas of things that I should do. You know, like, Bach, what you should do, what you should be doing. And, I mean, what I should be doing right now is doing my real job, but I'm on the radio doing this. But, you know, they said, like, oh, you know, you need to, like, network and get out there. And, like, they asked me, like, why don't I, you know, pump, you know, up what we're doing on my Facebook profile. And see, here's the thing. I feel absolutely ridiculous, like, asking anybody to, like, partake in anything that I do. It's not me. Like, I can't do that. You know, it's like we were talking about it, you know, a couple of months ago, you know, here on the show. Like, I have really, really good friends that have no idea, like, what I'm up to. And they could, you know, they could listen to the show. You know, some of them know I do a show. They don't know what day. They don't know where. They don't know, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And I'm fine with that. You know, I don't know how to describe it. I'm different. I'm a little bit odd.
You know how you describe it? Just how you just did. You are different.
Yeah, but...
That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, but I wanted to get to this, though, and I don't know. Switchboard says we had 6 minutes left. If I can find my email. A couple weeks on the show, I don't know if Superstar, now see, the last time, we're not going to get to it because here I go. the last time you were on the show, I was planning, I don't think you know this, but I was planning on doing a couple of different segments with you. Now, you remember when we had Sam Fels on the show and we did Getting to Know Sam Fels? Well, someone, an email here, has suggested to me that we do Getting to Know the Superstar. So I was planning a Getting to Know the Superstar. So the next time we have you on the show, which as of right now, the plan is for it to be next Thursday night at the conclusion of the Blackhawks-Phoenix Coyotes game. We're going to try this thing again. We'll see if we can get it right next week. I mean, we would have to start at 10:30 at night. Are you okay with that? Is that too much past your bedtime?
No, I think I can probably swing that. I may doze off towards the end, but I think I can probably swing that.
Wouldn't be the first time. So 10:30. No, wouldn't be. 10:30 to 11:30 next Thursday night back here, blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. And we'll also post it on that blog UN thing that we don't like to talk about. Thethirdmanin.com. And then I was also thinking, I thought this was brilliant. I came up with all these great questions, and I don't even know where the thing is anymore because I can't find anything in my house. But I was gonna, we were gonna do. I didn't really come up with a snazzy title, but we were gonna do how well does Superstar know his Third Man in Radio? I was gonna ask you, or I'd have somebody come on and ask you a bunch of questions that if there are a lot of people that listen to this show. And I know that there's some people that have listened to every single second of the show, which is scary to me. I mean, really, I'm worried about these people. But
you don't even listen to every show.
Well, in theory, we should be. I mean, if we're talking to each other the whole time. But I was gonna try to see, like, how well you're paying attention. So maybe you should go back. Maybe this weekend you should go back and listen to some shows that you think that you're not really fresh up on. And I don't know, we'll have to wait until we get to a show. Maybe the following, if we do a show the following Thursday, how about this? Well, I don't know if we could do that. Well, if my hockey team doesn't make the playoffs, then we could, and we're not looking too good right now. But, we'll figure out when we're going to do it. But we'll do how well does Superstar know the Third Man in Radio? I can't wait.
I like that idea.
Yes. And then we'll do, maybe we'll do next week regardless, we'll do Getting to Know the Superstar after the Phoenix Coyotes. A little late night with Chris Block and the Superstar.
Sounds good.
Wacky segments. All right, we're not going to have enough time to get into it. We had an emailer, and I got to apologize because I've really been way, way too busy and involved with all sorts of things to be totally good about answering all my emails to all the good people out there that do email me, and even the ones that call me a dick and all that kind of stuff. You're good people, too, because if you take the time to say that I'm a dick, you must like me on some level. Okay, here we go. So you're going to like this story. The other day, yesterday actually, I'm getting off the CTA, the train, right? And I get off the train and then I walk like a mile and a half home. I do it every single day. I'd rather walk than sit on the bus in traffic. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I got my headphones on and I'm listening to the music and I'm jamming and usually, like, when you see me, like, I'm not I'm not anything to look at, you know. I'm not an attractive man. I'm tall and bulgy and lanky and just awkward looking. Like, so everybody pretty much just leaves me alone. But there was one guy the other day, yesterday, who, and again, I have music blaring into my ears. And I'm just jamming, right? This guy he's got a backpack. He's tall. He's older. He's really, really red-faced, so I'm thinking he's not homeless, because you pretty much tell when a guy's homeless and when he's not homeless. I mean, maybe he just became homeless. I don't know, but he was asking me a question. So I go to take one of my earpieces out, and I go, I give him a huh, and he doesn't say anything. Like, he's just got this blank expression on his face, and like, I don't break momentum for anything. Like, that's the way I play hockey. It's the way I walk down the street. It's the way I do this show. I don't break momentum for anything. So, like, I'm walking the whole time, and I'm looking at him. He's not saying anything. So I just roll my eyes. This guy, I roll my eyes, and I'm like, okay, fine. I just keep walking. As I'm putting my earpiece on, I can hear him cursing me. He goes, of all the, I don't know what he said, but I this is the part I picked up. He goes, you motherfucking cocksucker. And then and I turn around and I go, huh? And he goes, suck my cock. And I just turned and I just waved at him and kept going. My question to you is, Superstar, how come guys, every time, like, it's everybody. I've done it. You've done it. We've all done it. Why, when we get really, really mad at another guy, why is the first thing that comes to our mind having that person put their mouth around our penis? Like, why is that? Does that make any sense to you?
No, it does not.
I would not call someone a cocksucker and then tell, like, you know, do the thing with the thing and say, hey, get on this. I would never do that. Like, I mean, I've said it before because you just get angry and you say it. Like, I don't understand. Like, but why? I laughed. I chuckled. And occasionally I looked over my shoulder because he had a big backpack. He might have had it filled with, you know, Dove soap bars, and he beat the shit out of me with it. I don't know. It was like, I did occasionally look over my shoulder. But I remember that for a long time. I remember what was playing in my ear. I was jamming to the Wallflowers, Bringing Down the Horse, God Don't Make Lonely Girls. And the guy, you know, like I said, I took the earpiece out of my thing, out of my ear, and he didn't say anything. So I'm like, okay, buddy, I'm going to keep walking. And then he blew up. But that was something interesting that happened to me yesterday.
You do have that effect on people.
Yeah. All right, an hour has gone.
Incidentally, Block?
Yeah.
12,893, the paid attendance at the Thrasher game tonight.
No way. There wasn't any more than 3,000 people there. There couldn't have been. No way.
ThrashersNHL.com is reporting 12,893.
No way. That's John McDonough math at its finest. John McDonough could get away with it. Although he hasn't really pushed the envelope too much this year, but he did give a phony number out the other night. Close to capacity, but it wasn't capacity, and he announced it well over. But, all right, Superstar, I hope the people are happy you're back.
I am.
Are you happy?
I am happy.
All right, I'm happy, too. We'll be back on Tuesday night in our regular time slot. Tuesday night, gosh, what would that be? November 3rd at 8 o'clock, talking about a whole bunch of stuff. And I think we're going to be email heavy because I got a bunch of emails that I don't have time to answer because they deserve, like, really, really long, thoughtful responses. And I quite honestly, I don't have that kind of time right now. But so we'll do them on the air is what I'm saying. And then next Thursday night, we'll be back with another post-game show because there's no way. And if you've seen me after games at the United Center this year, you'll know immediately what I'm talking about. There's no way I could do a post-game show after a home game. I'm sure they'd be entertaining, but I'm not doing it. So next Thursday, our next post-game show after the Phoenix Coyotes and the Blackhawks, 10:30 will start up. So whether the game's over or not, we'll start at 10:30. And if it's still going on, we'll give you some in-game commentary. It'll be much better than Pat Foley misidentifying the Nashville Predators as the Colorado Avalanche. And Andrew Ebbett is Andrew Ladd. But that's not as bad as the other one. But anyway, good show. Thank you very much for being here, Superstar. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you Tuesday night and then again next Thursday night. Say goodbye to the people, Superstar.
Goodbye, people.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.